Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, August 26th, 2021. County Judge Calls for Masks to Come Back by Sachi McClendon. SACHI at BigBendSentinel.com. Far West Texas. There are an estimated 16 active COVID cases in Presidio County as of print time this week. That number is up from 8 active cases on August 16th and quickly rose to just under 20 cases a few days later. However, according to the Texas Department of State Health Services, the total has since dropped back down to 16 active cases. In a press release on Friday evening, County Judge Cinderella Guevara said she strongly recommends Presidio County residents start wearing masks again as the Delta variant of the virus continues to spread throughout the state. Now may be the moment for us as Presidio County residents to consider a process for preserving lives and livelihoods. It is my hope that having an understanding that we may still unknowingly carry the virus to people we love and want to protect will outweigh any political value we may esteem in the no-mask mandate, Guevara wrote. Due to Texas Governor Greg Abbott's executive order banning governmental entities from implementing a mask mandate, Guevara can only recommend the practice. Things are a bit more complicated for the county's school districts. In an about-face last week, the Texas Education Agency decided to temporarily stop enforcing Governor Greg Abbott's executive order, opening the door for districts to set their own mask policy. Shortly after TEA's announcement, Presidio Independent School District jumped into action and announced that all staff, students, and visitors will be required to wear masks while on district property. Facial coverings will be part of our district dress code. We had this mask mandate in place all last year, and our students and staff did a great job of wearing masks, Superintendent Ray Vasquez said in an email. Up in North County, the Marfa Independent School Board is voting at a school board meeting today on whether to require masks on campus. As the Big Bend Sentinel previously reported, MISD Superintendent Oscar Aguero was frustrated with the way TEA recently had not been in step with CDC guidelines. So far, there hasn't been a reported case on campus for this school year, and no student is in quarantine. At Sul Ross State University, there are currently 8 active cases amongst students and faculty. It is not known if or how many COVID patients are hospitalized at the Big Bend Regional Medical Center, as its spokesperson was out on jury duty and did not respond in time for print. On Monday, August 23rd, the Brewster County Emergency Management Coordinator, Stephanie Elmore, reported 3 individuals were hospitalized in the county. As the only hospital in the Tri-County area, BBRMC has 2 ICU beds and up to 10 ventilators. Over in Brewster County, there are 25 active cases, and Jeff Davis currently has 0. While positive cases haven't swamped the Tri-County, surrounding larger metropolitan areas have seen a huge uptick in COVID cases and hospitalizations. As Marfa Public Radio previously reported, hospitals in the Permian Basin are seeing a sharp increase in the number of COVID patients, stretching medical personnel and resources thin. In El Paso County, an area where many hospitalized Big Bend residents are transferred to, the numbers have gone up 700% to 1,845 positive cases in the past 2 months. While I am proud to say that Presidio County leads the state with the most vaccinated populace, the path ahead for us will continue to have its ups and downs and will require resilience, Judge Guevara said in her statement. As lockdowns have been relaxed and all segments of the economy reopened, we are now hearing of a great number of viral resurgences with the new Delta variant and the rise of COVID hospitalizations. Local law enforcement deals with the realities of enforcing the governor's immigration crackdown. By Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBendSentinel.com. Brewster, Presidio Counties. The number of people apprehended for crossing into the United States from Mexico reached a 21-year high, with crossings in the Big Bend sector rising 357% since last July. Federal prosecutors are bringing charges against some of the people involved in transporting those undocumented immigrants into the country. But starting September 1st, Texas lawmakers are empowering state law enforcement to make more arrests for human smuggling and trespassing under new state statutes. Governor Greg Abbott has called for crackdowns on undocumented immigrants and smugglers, sending state troopers to the border to enforce state and federal immigration law, and sending in the National Guard to assist. In recent years, those apprehended for smuggling immigrants could be prosecuted under state law if law enforcement could prove the person had been paid to smuggle people. But beginning Wednesday, September 1st, new provisions in the state laws say proving there's a financial motive is no longer necessary for state law enforcement to arrest smugglers. New language that amends the state penal code also says the person can be charged if they assist, guide, or direct two or more people to enter agricultural land without consent from the owner. The third-degree felony charge can now ramp up to a second-degree felony if there was monetary gain involved, and is a first-degree felony if a person they smuggled is sexually assaulted, suffers serious bodily injury, or dies. Brewster County Sheriff Ronnie Dodson has encountered smugglers bringing groups of immigrants through the Brewster County countryside countless times, but he's not always able to arrest them. Those who were somewhat familiar with Texas law have successfully avoided state charges of human smuggling by claiming they did not receive any money in exchange for transporting immigrants. He said the smugglers transporting undocumented immigrants are most often U.S. citizens. I'll get them saying they just found these people on the road. Most of them will say they saw people walking and they needed a ride. It's BS, he said. Under the new law, Dodson said, we're going to get more people in jail for sure. We've had to let numerous people go if HSI, Homeland Security Investigations, doesn't want them. And then we can't prove financial gain, so we basically have to let them go. Beginning next week, they can be arrested for smuggling, whether financially motivated or not. Jails have become a reliable revenue stream for counties in West Texas, receiving daily payments to house U.S. Marshal inmates in the local jails. In Brewster County, it amounts to around $800,000 in revenue per year, with most beds being filled by federal arrestees that bring money to the county. With Abbott's directive to up arrests on state charges, space in county jails may fill up with state inmates who will stay at the cost of county taxpayers and lower the available space for paid U.S. Marshal inmates. We just don't have the jail space to do what everybody wants us to do right now, Dodson said. If they're going to spend all these millions and trillions, I'd hope they'd give it to some of us counties to add jail space, and then we'd be able to hold some of these folks. Recounting an incident from the day prior, Dodson said state officers brought in 10 trespassers, but he only had room to hold 3. The other 7 had to go somewhere else, and the county had to pay $65 a day for wherever they go. As far as I'm concerned, regardless of the cost, it's got to happen, said Presidio County Sheriff Danny Dominguez, who expressed frustration at the Biden administration's handling of the increase in undocumented immigrants at the southern border. We have to prosecute these smugglers, these criminals. Whatever they're doing, it's going to cost our taxpayers money. Investigations by HSI are turned over to the U.S. Attorney's Office for prosecution, but some local law enforcement have said they have made arrests only for the USAO to not take the case. 83rd District Attorney Ori White said, "My office is prosecuting many of these cases where the U.S. Attorney's Office is perhaps very short-handed and cannot prosecute them. I don't know why the U.S. Attorney's Office is not prosecuting these cases." White said his office will continue to take these human smuggling cases so long as we are requested to do so by federal border enforcement officials, and that he's happy to help where he can. Across the district, particularly in our border divisions, human smuggling prosecutions have increased in the last year, a representative from the USAO office said in response, stating the office readily accepts cases for federal prosecution when sufficient admissible evidence is presented. Federal prosecutors secured indictments against 89 defendants in July alone, ranging from human smuggling to illegal re-entry into the U.S. and drug trafficking cases. According to court records, human smuggling cases in the USAO have more than doubled from this same time last year. For the governor, state charges are another tool in the arsenal to try to stop southern border crossings. Along with prosecuting the smugglers, Governor Abbott has encouraged criminal trespassing charges against undocumented immigrants who pass through the hundreds of miles of private land that make up Texas' border with Mexico. In West Texas, Dodson said purple paint on ranch fence lines, in accordance with state statutes, indicates private property. To be charged with criminal trespassing, the person has to have credibly known they were on private property. In Del Rio, 9 Venezuelans recently served 15 days in state jail for criminal trespassing in the wake of the state's new crackdown, according to the Texas Tribune. Having served their time, they were handed over to Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement, who could choose to deport, detain, or release the group, and asked them to return for a hearing at a later date. The State Office of Court Administration is preparing for hundreds of arrests a day by state law enforcement in anticipation of the new smuggling and trespassing arrests, which realistically would overwhelm the court and local jails. If one guy is driving and there are 10 people in the van, we can't put many groups of 11 people in the jail before it's overflowing, Presidio County Attorney Rod Ponton said last month. Sheriff Dodson explained that if his jail fills, the judges start considering releasing arrestees on personal recognizance bonds, where instead of paying a bond that they can't afford, they are released with the promise to return for a later hearing. At times, those released are never heard from again, and with no permanent address in the U.S., there is little means of recourse. Dodson said that ultimately, they often have to dismiss those cases so that their disposition rate, a metric they have to maintain, where a certain percentage of cases have to be deposed, isn't negatively impacted. Dodson wondered aloud, Are we just spinning our wheels? Because of the limited resources, Ponton said it's unlikely here in these small counties that we'll prosecute the illegal immigrants as opposed to the smugglers. Our hope is that the federal authorities who have the responsibility for enforcing federal immigration law would deport the illegal crossers. Ponton, who also assists the district attorney upon request, said the crackdown on smuggling is an attempt to dissuade immigrants and smugglers from entering through the Big Bend region. We want to substantially increase the prosecution of human smuggling in Presidio County under state law because we want to get the word out to the smuggling gangs that this is not a free ride in Presidio County, and hopefully they would go other places. Dodson reflected, I've been sheriff for 21 years, and I've been in law enforcement for almost 40, and I've never seen someone spend 180 days in jail for a Class B misdemeanor. Under Abbott's emergency declaration, an agricultural trespassing charge moves from a Class C to Class B misdemeanor, which can come with up to 180 days in jail. Earlier this year, the American Civil Liberties Union warned Texas border counties that following Abbott's version of immigration enforcement could be a constitutional violation. Those within the United States have a legal right to seek protection. A non-citizen who is physically present in the United States, irrespective of their status, may apply for asylum, the letter to county officials read. Efforts to harshly enforce immigration laws against non-citizens to deter them from seeking asylum or other protection, or to deter others from coming to the United States and seeking protection, may therefore violate federal law. Dodson acknowledged that many who cross into the borderlands are fleeing worse conditions, escaping natural disasters, violence, or unrest in their home country. Many are hoping to either claim asylum in the U.S. through a legal process or enter the country entirely unnoticed, which is illegal. The governor's trying to punish them, but he's actually doing them a favor. They eat, get air conditioning, and a bed, Dodson said. They figure if we put them in jail for 180 days, that will teach them a lesson. But one thing they're not understanding is that being in jail is sometimes better than where they are coming from. PISD to require masks on campus, MISD to decide today, by Sachi McClendon, SACHI at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. Late last week, the Texas Education Agency decided to temporarily stop enforcing Governor Greg Abbott's executive order that bans school districts from implementing a mask mandate. Prior to the TEA's about-face, Texas school districts in this most recent school year could not mandate their staff and students wear masks, merely recommend they do so. Shortly after TEA's announcement last Thursday, Presidio Independent School District quickly jumped into action and announced that all staff, students, and visitors will be required to wear masks while on district property. Facial coverings will be part of our district dress code. We had this mask mandate in place all last year, and our students and staff did a great job of wearing masks. We hope that everyone understands the importance of wearing masks in indoor facilities, Presidio ISD Superintendent Ray Vasquez said in an email. We are following Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommendations and just trying to keep our district as safe as possible. Even though PISD is less than 3 weeks into the new school year, there have already been 8 positive cases on campus, with 6 still active, according to the PISD Police Department. We do have some students that are currently quarantined as recommended by TEA Health Guidance, Vasquez said. In its updated guidance, TEA requires the school to report any COVID cases to the county's local health authority, who is Rachel Sane of the Texas Department of State Health Services, as well as all staff and parents of those who tested positive. Parents who opt to send their children to school in the 2 weeks following exposure are encouraged to closely monitor their children for symptoms, the guidance reads. Vasquez said, in addition to working with the local health authority, he's been consulting with Presidio County Judge Cinderella Guevara on how to move forward as the virus mounts its comeback. We are working collaboratively together and taking all the precautionary measures to have a safe learning environment in our district, Vasquez said. In a statement last Friday, Guevara pushed for masks in schools, saying CDC officials also called for universal masking of teachers, staff, students, and visitors in schools, regardless of vaccination status and community transmission of the virus. Even as the Delta variant has swept through Texas, leading to hospitalization numbers not seen since January, Governor Abbott has refused to drop his executive order banning mask mandates. As the first day of school was fast approaching, a number of school districts either defied Abbott's order or tried to create workarounds, like making masks a part of the district's dress code. Abbott, through Attorney General Ken Paxton, quickly fired back, taking the districts to court. Then last Thursday, the Texas Supreme Court temporarily allowed districts to implement a mask mandate, saying that Abbott needed to take these matters before a lower appellate court before being heard again. With these state-level battles still being waged, Superintendent Vasquez said it's been difficult to navigate the ever-changing COVID protocols. But we have a great staff here in PISD, and we will make the necessary changes, adjustments needed to provide our students the best education possible while maintaining a safe learning environment for all, Vasquez said. Up in North County, the Marfa Independent School Board is voting today on whether to require masks on campus. As the Big Bend Sentinel previously reported, MISD Superintendent Oscar Aguero was frustrated with the way the TEA recently had not been in step with the CDC guidelines. In a previous school board meeting, Aguero said that he weighed defying the governor's orders like other school districts, but he didn't want to leave his staff with the decision to either obey direction from their boss or their governor. It's something the school board has to vote on, so a decision will be made Thursday evening, Aguero said on Tuesday about the upcoming meeting tonight. I can't tell you which way it will go. In the past, Aguero has said that if the state allowed it, he would push for a mask mandate. At the present moment, we do not have any active cases. The only case that I know of was my daughter, and that was prior to school, Aguero said, adding that the lower grades have generally been wearing their masks more than the upper grades. Aguero said that if the board does go through with the mask requirement, that he will recommend for the new policy to take effect on Monday. That way, if they don't have masks, they have time to get masks, he said. Going forward, TEA said it would continue to not enforce the governor's executive order until litigation between the districts and the state resolve. Population decline in Presidio County met with resistance in Presidio, resignation in Marfa. By Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. The Census Bureau reported population drops across Presidio County over the past 10 years, and while Marfa's mayor believed the declining numbers were accurate, chalking it up to gentrification in the area, City of Presidio officials are doubting the count, questioning whether the census missed hundreds of their residents. The U.S. Census takes place every 10 years, and in 2010, Presidio County had 7,818 residents counted. Just 10 years later, in 2020, the number of Presidio County residents counted fell to 6,131, a 21.6% decline. While Texas grew, gaining two new U.S. House representatives based on state-level data released earlier this year, its rural areas did not keep up. The census has now delivered new data broken down on the levels of counties and census tracts, giving more insight into how this region of Texas has shifted in the past 10 years. The trend of rural populations declining is common across the United States and Texas, but even among Texas' 254 counties, Presidio County had the sixth steepest decline in population. The census divided Presidio County into tracts in North and South County, and Census Tract 9501, which includes Marfa, Ruidosa, Candelaria, and other unincorporated parts of North County, was counted at 2,634 in 2010. It dropped by 13.1% in the following 10 years, leaving it with 2,289 residents counted in 2020. Marfa Mayor Manny Baeza believed the count, saying, "I would think those numbers are accurate because of the number of Airbnbs we have in our town." In other words, residents aren't moving to our community. It's more Airbnbs going up. The mayor said he sees few avenues the city could take that could lead to growing the population of Marfa back in a meaningful way. The city has previously considered putting a cap on the number of short-term rentals within city limits. That effort was put on hold while they waited to see if the state legislative session this year would address short-term rental regulations, but few results have come. The Texas legislature and courts have continually affirmed the rights of homeowners to use their properties as short-term rentals and halted restrictions on short-term rentals by local governments. I think our hands are tied. You can't really tell people what to do with personal property, he said. Baeza attributed the declining population of Marfa to a mixture of continually growing real estate prices and the sparse availability of jobs in the area that pay enough to afford housing and other costs of living in Marfa. "It's too expensive in this town," he said bluntly. "Honestly, it just comes down to gentrification. That's what it boils down to. Population declines can impact city tax revenues and school enrollment and funding, and the census numbers can crucially shift the amount of federal funds the area can access over the next 10 years. Presidio City Manager Brad Newton has kept a keen eye on the census numbers in years past, believing that the threat of an undercount is higher in Presidio County for a wide variety of reasons. Census Tract 9502, which includes Presidio, Redford, Shafter, and other unincorporated parts of South County, was counted at 5,184 in the 2010 census. In 2020, that number was down to 3,842, a precipitous 25.9% drop. Newton is skeptical, and he has reason to be. In 2010, the city of Presidio successfully petitioned the state demographer to adjust the population count upward within the Texas Demographic Center. A key reason the state agreed to change population estimates in Presidio was the number of water utility connections the city had active. Currently, Presidio has 1,776 active meters. Newton set a conservative estimate that, on average, three people live in each household, comes out to 5,328 residents just in Presidio limits, well off the census estimate of 3,842 in South County's census tract. Those meter counts account for both residential and commercial properties, however, meaning not all meters have residents associated with them. In Marfa, the utilities department said it had 1,500 active meters, but the mayor estimated that more than 150 are associated with short-term rentals, others are commercial properties, and still more are second homes whose owners do not claim Marfa as their primary residence. Still, the 2,289 estimated residents of North County, according to the census, would be an undercount if meters were calculated at three residents per meter in Marfa. In 2010, water meter data was used as evidence to change the population estimate of Presidio with the state demographer, whose office did not respond to requests for comment about the methodology used to change population estimates or whether Presidio could be contested again this year. But Newton plans to approach the state entity again this year and asks that the population estimate for Presidio be moved upward again. Let's face it, there's no secret that the census can't count, Newton said, but it's not totally their fault because a lot of people don't want to be counted. There are a variety of reasons he believes the census missed out on counting people in Presidio. The area has rural, remote pockets where residences are spaced out and hard to reach, and a historical issue of discrepancies between official addresses and actual street addresses. Some were hesitant to answer the door to a stranger, especially during the pandemic. Others may have heard it was online and didn't have access to reliable internet or a computer. Some working in Odessa and living in Presidio could have been counted up north or nowhere at all. Others, he believed, were afraid, especially with the noise from Washington of "Are you a citizen?" During the Trump administration's running of the census, there was talk of adding a citizenship question, which may have deterred some from answering, even though the question was ultimately not included in the census survey. Not only does Newton think the population didn't shrink by 25.9%, he believes it has grown, and he's not the only one. Presidio EMS Director Melinda Richardson pointed to a number of new buildings in town. Staffing among Customs and Border Protection in the area and within her experiences working EMS, she said, I know our ambulance calls are not going in the same direction as a 25% decrease. We're not seeing fewer calls. If we had a 25% decrease in population, our call volume would reflect that, and it does not. Richardson said, residents in the area don't understand the census numbers' impact on financial assistance to the county. I've been through this once back in 2011 when we did this, Newton said. If you live here, you're going to have water, so that's a very accurate way to figure it out. It worked for us in 2010, so we'll take a stab at correcting those numbers like we did back then, by going through the state demographer with our water meter counts, he added. We've got time to challenge this. Teague. In loving memory of Ella Jean Teague, January 10, 1934 to August 12, 2021. Ella Teague was born in Fort Davis, Texas, to Barney William Teague and Maud Adele Cootsie Teague as child number 8. Her 50 years of teaching showed her love of education and was a gift that touched many lives over the years as coach, counselor, and teacher. Ella was preceded in death by her parents, Barney and Maud, and 7 siblings, Barney Teague, spouse Claudina Teague, Charles Teague, Alice Sis Rushing, spouse Al Rushing, Raymond Teague, spouse Ruth Teague, Dorothy Harrington, spouse Tom Harrington, Alvis Teague, spouse Mary Lou Teague, and Ernest Teague, spouses Mary Teague and Anna Teague, as well as brother-in-law Tommy Woodward, 2 nieces, Kathleen Teague Largent and Amy Woodward. She is survived by a sister, Catherine Woodward, in College Station, Texas. Her final resting place will be in the Alpine Cemetery next to family. A memorial is pending COVID situations, and next of kin will be notified as arrangements are made. The officiate is the Alpine Memorial Funeral Home. If anyone would like to honor Ella's memory, please make a donation to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in her name. The family would like to acknowledge and thank her caregivers, Noni Huerta and Isabel Garcia, for their loving and sincere devotion given during her final years.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, August 19, 2021. FSCT Gets New Projector System by Nathan Heuer. The Fort Stockton Community Theater will soon be showing movies by way of a new projector system that was installed August 16th. Ross Harper, head of the Fort Stockton Film Society, and fellow society member Christiane Gonzalez partnered to purchase the $30,000 system that features a 180-inch HD surface screen that is electronically retractable. Absolute AVL of Midland and owner Henry Greer installed the screen and the 10,000-lumen laser project throughout the day on Monday. Harper said that he hopes to start showing classical movies, foreign films, and shows such as John Wayne Westerns starting in October. His initial plan is to hold movies on the weekends and provide families with a variety of shows to view. The films will be scheduled during times that do not interfere with play practices and shows. It's going to be based on a film series that they did in Austin every summer, which was classic films and foreign films. Casablanca, or The Maltese Falcon, or old comedies, Marx Brothers, he said. We can have movies on weekends when there are no plays. When they are practicing, we don't do anything for a month. Then the next month, we have kids' movies during a Sunday matinee. The Texas native has long been a film fan, as well as Gonzalez. Harper had his grandmother take him to see films in a local art theater in Dallas when he was growing up, and after seeing the $2.4 million FSCT built nearly 2 years ago, he knew he wanted to give the locals the same experience he had as a kid in such a beautiful venue. The theater and this project of a small town spending years of raising money to create a first-class venue is an inspiration. It tells me a lot about the town. It's an incredible asset for this town. I think the more it's used by different crowds, the better off the whole town is. My grandmother would take me to silent films, Marx Brothers, Casablanca when I was younger. I was in Dallas and there was a little art theater. She would be like, they're playing Marx Brothers all weekend. I just loved it. Then when I got to Austin, raising my kids was going every weekend to the theater on Congress Avenue and watching old movies. Gonzalez had mutual feelings towards the FSCT venue and its potential. I'm a big film fan. When I was 16, I watched John Wayne and all that stuff. We need to have a place to show that stuff like that. I think it's a good addition to the theater, she said. The next step in the process for Harper will be to file paperwork for the Fort Stockton Film Society to become an official nonprofit organization. The current informal group, which is made up of Harper, Gonzalez, and Jeremy Gonzalez, will hold a meeting next month to formalize their board. As we get formalized, we'll be calling for volunteers to help take tickets and stuff in exchange for a free ticket to the show. Then we'll put our little suggestions and surveys, ask what people would like to see, Harper said. Probable cases spike numbers, by Nathan Heuer. COVID-19 probable active cases in Pecos County saw a significant increase this past week due to a report by Ira Ann General Hospital. The facility reported to Pecos County Emergency Management Coordinator August 17th that there were 32 individuals that have tested positive for COVID at IGH. The tests administered were antigen tests and in turn do not fall under the confirmed active case criteria, according to DSHS, due to their accuracy. An individual must test positive for the virus by way of a PCR test to be considered a confirmed case. The 32 individuals that tested positive at IGH via the antigen test coincides with 28 confirmed active cases that were tested at Fort Stockton medical facilities. If the 32 probable cases are 100% accurate, the total number of active cases would be at 60 in the county, the highest number since January 13th. Dominguez added that the numbers may not be completely accurate, as DSHS is not reporting to the designated counties of case counts anymore. In the past, he would be informed if a resident tested positive for COVID outside of the county. That is no longer the case. Pecos County Memorial Hospital CEO Betsy Briscoe reported that PCMH had 6 people hospitalized due to COVID complications. The hospitalization number peaked at 9 last week. The facility can hold 11 patients, according to Briscoe. As COVID active cases and probable active cases have risen, so have vaccinations, but at a much slower rate. PCMH held their second vaccine clinic since the spike in cases last Saturday. The hospital gave out 106 first doses and 11 second doses. 41 of those doses were given to individuals between the ages of 12 and 17. Pecos County data shows that out of the 62 vaccine-eligible people that have tested positive since the recent spike 3 weeks ago, only 10 were vaccinated. That translates to 84% of positive tests came from unvaccinated individuals. There have not been any deaths in Pecos County since February 16th. Commissioners adopt budget, decide tax rate, by Megan Waring. The Pecos County Commissioners Court approved the 2022 budget at its August 16th meeting. The proposed tax rate is .777 per $100 valuation. The general fund rate is .064, road and bridge is .0123, and debt service is zero. Pecos County is anticipating a higher tax rate to bring in approximately the same amount of money last year due to a decrease in value, according to County Judge Joe Schuster. Receipts, according to the budget summary, are $31,779,863 for the general fund. Commissioners will meet on August 30th to adopt the tax rate. This meeting will have a public hearing.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, August 19th. COVID cases increasing locally. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. COVID-19 cases are again on the rise in Ward County. One death, believed to be COVID-related, was recorded over the weekend. On Monday, there were 50 active cases, up from 10 on July 26. But the number of active cases continues to increase dramatically, according to the Texas DSHS website. On Wednesday morning, there are now 69 active cases. No new fatalities have been recorded, with that count remaining at 24. There have been 800 confirmed cases, 519 probable, and an estimated 1,226 recoveries. Statewide, 218,811 active cases have been reported, with 53,196 deaths and 3,040,546 recoveries. Ward County Judge Greg Holley said, quote, active cases in Ward County represent about 0.5% of the county's population. About 11% of the population has tested positive for or been determined to probably have the virus at one time or another. Beyond the active numbers, what continues to concern me is our hospital situation. Hospitals remain at capacity levels. All hospitals in Odessa and Midland remain on diversion. Locally, we have 10 patients in Ward Memorial, with 8 of those having COVID-19. Quote, sadly, I am aware of a local death that appears to be COVID-related. It takes some time for fatalities to be reported, but I thought I'd mention it. In my own family, I have a cousin fighting for his life on a ventilator. Our prayers are with those struggling with illness and loss. End quote. MEDC agrees to negotiate bids for broadband. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Kara Faulkner with Faulkner Consulting presented results of the Phase 1 construction contract for the Monahans Broadband Outside Plant Infrastructure during the Monahans Economic Development Corporation Board of Directors monthly meeting on Monday. The MEDC board approved seeking bids for the broadband during the last meeting. The group received bids from 3 companies, and bids were opened on Friday, August 13th. Companies bidding on the project included Shalom Telecom Services, Electricom LLC, and JKL Associates. Faulkner said, quote, we received interest from 10 construction companies, and we are grateful to the 3 companies that submitted bids, end quote. Faulkner added he was, quote, disappointed that the bids were higher than anticipated and suggested that the project would likely need to be rebid, end quote. The board authorized Faulkner to negotiate with Shalom Telecom Services, the apparent low bidder, to validate the bid and to clarify whether the structure of the subsequent bid package needs to be modified. According to Faulkner, quote, I believe that the bids reflected the high volume of fiber construction in the telecom industry and the continuing shortage of labor resulting from the pandemic, end quote. The board also authorized Faulkner to negotiate one or more purchase agreements for the material items included as part of the fiber optic cable and conduit bid. Faulkner obtained prior approval from the federal EDA to obtain several items outside of the typical bid process because of the long lead times for procurement of these items. Quote, we are seeing lead times of 8 to 10 months for fiber and conduit from distribution outlets. We are currently negotiating directly with the material manufacturers and anticipate that we can obtain materials within a 60-day window, Faulkner said. Board members Eddie Nelms and Richard Irwin both agreed and acknowledged they are personally experiencing similar labor and material shortages in the construction industry. Quote, we are aggressively pursuing material procurement and anticipate that construction will sync up with the material delivery. We have come a long way, and despite these minor procurement issues, reliable high-speed internet will become a reality in Monahans and Ward County, he added. In contract amendments, a second amendment to the property contract with Paso Construction was approved. Paso Construction is purchasing the four lots directly in front of the detention pond on 15th Street and across the street from Car Wash 828 for $95,000. Location of the lots is 1601, 1607, 1613, and 1617 East 15th Street, and was to be developed for four new homes. Quote, "Instead of the homes, they want to build a 20-unit apartment complex on that land," MEDC Executive Director Ashley Adalto said. Other conditions of contract include the buyer will have concrete slab poured by March 21, 2022, and completion is scheduled for November 21, 2022. Paso Construction owner will appear at the next planning and zoning meeting to get the lots changed from an R1 residential to an R3 multifamily dwelling, which will allow for the apartment complex on the lot. In other matters, the annual report presented by MEDC Director Adalto was approved. The report detailed MEDC sales tax receipts from 2008 until present, the completion of the 828 car wash, Dollar General, Fairfield Inn, construction updates on the new elementary, Monahan's Parkway, and the school access roads, HTEAO, and new apartment complex on 15th Street, two new convenience stores, East Monahan subdivision updates, and several new housing projects. In regular business, the directors approved accounts payable totaling $147,000, which included $2,250 to Maverick Engineering for school access road signage, striping, and lighting, $136,000 to J.D. King for Monahan's Parkway Phase 2, $7,500 for payroll, salaries, phone, insurance, maintenance, and fuel. The financial report reflecting a balance of $1.6 million in available funds and minutes of the July 19th regular meeting were approved. Directors present were Hal Upchurch, Nelms, Irwin, and Camilla Blum. Brian Franks was absent. Eagle Stadium deemed not safe. The story was written by Rosie Flores of the Pecos Enterprise. Safety is the reason that board members and administration have opted to build a new stadium at the Pecos High School, according to PBTISD Superintendent Brent Jaco. Eagle Stadium at Rotary Field has been deemed not structurally safe for fans, according to a structural assessment made by Ponce Fuez Engineering. The firm told the district that there is, quote, "significant corrosion to the steel framing and cracking and spalling of the concrete throughout the 47-year-old stadium. Aspects of the steel structure have experienced significant section loss and no longer provide the original design capacity, making the stadium not structurally safe to hold fans," end quote. The structural assessment was done as a due diligence step prior to expending money recently set aside by the Board of Trustees to renovate the stadium. The district also has met with the building inspector for the town of Pecos City regarding the report and expects to receive further guidance later this week. Quote, "The district is currently working on several options for the upcoming football season. There are many aspects to consider and ensure we can meet prior to finalizing a decision," said Jaco. This assessment and report does not have anything to do with the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, but with the safety of fans regarding the current standing structure as is. Jayco had previously said that the district had some money saved for a rainy day. Quote, "Typically, this balance is to cover emergencies and major repairs that are not part of the year-end operating budget," Jayco said. Recently, the school board voted to use $32.5 million of this fund for a construction project, specifically a possible apartment complex to house teachers and renovation of Eagle Stadium. The expense would leave the district with about $20 million remaining in the emergency fund. Jayco said that spending the money this way, in addition to the $175 million bond authorized by taxpayers in May, was a good business decision for the district and taxpayers, as opposed to only borrowing $140 million, using the fund balance to supplement the funding for the projects authorized by the bond election, and then going back to the taxpayers at a later date for more bond money. Man jailed for car burglaries, charged with gun theft. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man is in custody at the Ward County Jail on charges of burglary of a vehicle. He is now being charged with gun theft. Seth Garrett Casey, age 21, of 902 South Gary Street, was in custody on two vehicle burglary charges after he was caught on the victim's camera taking items from two vehicles at 901 South Harry Street, according to Monahans Police Department Captain Christopher Quintana. MPD officers responded to the vehicle break-in on July 20th around 7:17 a.m. Quote, "After reviewing the victim's surveillance cameras, officers were able to identify Casey as the suspect of the vehicle thefts, and a warrant was obtained," he said. Casey was later picked up and jailed. On August 3rd, an individual brought a gun to the police station and wanted to see if the weapon was stolen. Quote, "The individual said he bought the firearm from Casey and suspected it might have been stolen," Quintana said. Lieutenant Jeremy Kynes ran the serial number of the firearm and determined it had been reported stolen from the 1400 block of South Gale. Casey was still in jail at the time, and after Kynes spoke with Casey about the firearm, he admitted to taking the gun, Quintana said. He was subsequently charged with theft of a firearm and remains in custody at the jail. The vehicles in this case showed no signs of forced entry and were all left open. Quote, "We're still seeing an increase in automobile burglaries and theft recently, mostly due to cars being left unlocked at night," Quintana said. Quintana said this serves as a reminder to not only lock your cars, but also keep valuables out of sight. Seeing belongings in a car creates an opportunity crime for a criminal. Quote, "We want the citizens to be diligent and to double-check and make sure their vehicles are locked," he said. Bond was set at $3,000 for each burglary of a vehicle charge and $10,000 for the gun theft charge. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for a term of not more than 10 years or less than 2 years, and a fine not to exceed $10,000.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.